I remember my friend Haley sent me the podcast you did with Lacey, and she was like, you need to talk to Unique. And I was like, Unique is all about beans. I've literally never been able to eat beans in my entire life, ever. Beans would destroy me. I'm the person who went eating fiber would make me more constipated and more miserable, not better. So I was like, there's no way this woman can help me. And finally, I did talk to you, and you did put me on the protocol, and it took so long for me, eating like a spoonful of beans at a time. But finally, we like turned the ship around. I was shocked, shocked.
Hello and welcome back to the You're Great podcast with your legume enthusiast, Unique Hammond. Today, I sit with my beautiful, powerful client, Alexa, who reached out to me in January of 2021. She had been on medical leave for 10 months. And we got on the phone together and she took me through her journey thus far. And to say that my mouth was agape is not an understatement. I was listening and taking notes and just profoundly moved by her story. But also, I listen a lot because my practice is over the phone, other than my groups, which I run over Zoom, because I really like to deeply listen and take deep notes on these health consultations that I'm doing. And I could hear the frailty in her voice, and I could hear the sense of, fuck it, I'll give this a try. But she just sounded beat. Amazing. She continued to apply curiosity to her journey at that point. And I could really meet the warrior within her that wanted to live the life that was there for her. You know, very powerful, career-driven woman, athlete, yogini, and someone who, you know, took care of herself for the most part. So she came with a Lyme diagnosis, gut constipation, gas, no mental clarity, no energy, acne, and we built a plan together and started our work together. So what you will hear is her story, her misdiagnosis around Lyme's disease, and where she is now in her healing journey. It's powerful, beautiful, and I hope the takeaway for you is really never give up. If something doesn't land in your gut, no matter who's telling it to you, whether it's a doctor, etc., to really listen to that gut instinct because it is powerful. And hers did pop up in there, and you'll hear it in the story. So thank you for joining me. Enjoy Alexa's healing story. Alexa, welcome to the You're Great podcast. I'm really excited to share your healing journey because your healing journey, as we were just talking about before I hit record, started when you were 13.
Yeah, it's so great to be here. It's honestly a journey that I thought would never end. Like, I just really never thought there would be any relief or like normalcy. I just thought I would always be different and limited and like uncomfortable in my own body. And then after I worked with you and like really just kind of this past year, I finally identify as like normal and healthy and balanced. And it's like such a gift because there were so many years and like decades where I was just like, this sucks. Why does everyone else get to feel great? And I just feel gross all the time. Like since I hit puberty, I just had chronic constipation, bloating, like to the point where like my mom was like, Alexa, why aren't you stuck like sucking your stomach in? Like, why does your stomach stick out so much? And I was like, I don't know. Doesn't everyone's stomach stick out? And she was like, no, that's not normal. And so that's when I like would start sucking in, which is awful for girls at like that age or whatever. But it was in large part because everything I ate would just completely not sit well at all. And I was just uncomfortable all the time. And I remember seeing all these specialists when I was like in high school. Like, obviously, my friends are thinking about like dating and makeup, and I'm going to like UCSF seeing like gut specialists and like doing colonoscopies and endoscopies. And they'd just be like, yep, like not finding, like, there's nothing here. Like, I don't know what to tell you. They just kept being like, yeah, you have IBS. It just means that, like, you know, you're going to have to deal with this. And then they wanted to put me on like the low FODMAP diet. And like, that's super restricting and like is basically anti-fiber. It's usually like, don't eat fiber. And so I tried that a bunch. I saw so many different like dietitians who were like, cut out all of the things, like cut out dairy, cut out gluten, cut out sugar, cut out like nightshades, cut out all these random things. I had people who charged like hundreds of dollars to do like blood tests that were supposed to tell you what foods you were sensitive to, like that food sensitivity testing. And like, so I'd take all of those things out and still like never any relief ever. And as I got into college, it persisted, which is just so embarrassing when you're like at a party or like on a date or whatever, and you're feeling super bloated and gassy and like trying to look sexy in a tight dress or whatever. And you're just like, oh my God, just don't look at me. I want to curl up in the fetal position. And sometimes it would be so painful too. Like trapped gas is super painful. Not a lot of people know that, but like I would spend a lot of nights in college just in bed curled in the fetal position and just like, this is so painful. I don't know what, like, I just have to sleep it off. Like, I'm just going to sleep it off and wait until the morning comes. And I remember for constipation, my doctors, my GI was like, yeah, just take Miralax. And so he just had me take Miralax every single night from like age 16 until like in my 20s. And so I would just take that, which is this like nasty powder that is supposed to help you go to the bathroom, but it like doesn't, it's like a gentle laxative, but it still doesn't feel like you're not having normal bowel movements. It just kind of gets it out, down, whatever. And then I remember seeing other like naturopaths who tried prescribing a bunch of different like herbal supplements. Like you're spending hundreds of dollars on supplements, hundreds of dollars on all these different doctors, and like no one's telling you the same thing. And that was kind of my journey up until Bali. And then Bali just really flipped everything upside down and so wild. So even before Bali, I like, and before we started working together, I wasn't healthy. Like I always had an imbalanced gut, and it made me lethargic too. Like my family would always make fun of me for going to bed at 9 every night. And I was just like, I don't understand how you're not exhausted. Like I'm so tired at the end of every day. And like, even in the middle of the day, especially after meals, like I would just get so sluggish. And lots of like blood sugar roller coasters. Like I would have to snack every few hours. I would get super hangry if I didn't like eat often enough. I really just, it was not how it was not happy. My body was not happy. It was like, we're not aligned with what's going on here. But anyways, then I went to Bali for my 200-hour yoga teacher training, which was a month. So we spent a month in Bali, which was a whole experience in and of itself. Parts of it were really cool and magical and special. And then parts were not as good. Like all of us got food poisoning. It's just like a rite of passage when you go to Bali. They call it Bali belly. And typically it's from like unintentionally drinking the water, usually because they like wash your lettuce or wash your fruit in the water and they don't tell you or whatever. And I thought I was really careful in only eating, like I tried not to eat salads for that purpose. I tried just to eat cooked things, but I definitely ate fruit and whatever it happened. So basically from like for almost all 4 weeks, all of us just had like horrible explosive diarrhea at random points throughout the yoga teacher training. And so whenever anyone would like randomly run out of class and like sprint towards their hut, we'd be like, oh, know what's happening now. Great.
I mean, you were clearing out though. Was that element of it okay? You're like, yay, I'm so clear. Like, no.
Like, yeah, you develop this really weird relationship with like diarrhea and like stomach flus and stuff. Cause you're like, oh man, I can finally go to the bathroom. This is nice. And then after like 24 hours of it, you're like, okay, I'm over it. Like, can we just get somewhere in the middle, please?
I mean, have you unpacked the fact that you spent the majority of your young life in and out of doctor's offices? And
yeah, it's just kind of like crazy to me because I'd always thought of myself as a healthy, strong person. Like I was an athlete. I was always incredibly active. I played tennis through college competitively. And so I always identified as a strong person, but I had all these problems that made my life uncomfortable and unpleasant, but not like fatal. It wasn't like cancer. It wasn't like some really awful, it wasn't like Crohn's. It wasn't like my dad had ulcerative colitis and colon cancer. It wasn't that. It wasn't anything serious enough or diagnosable for people to really care or understand how to triage me. And my family all thought I was just like being dramatic. And at some point I thought I was being dramatic too. I was like, maybe I'm just like super sensitive to all this stuff. And I like notice, maybe I'm just like hyper aware and hyper vigilant of all my body's sensations. And I just need to like chill out, because I do have an anxious mind and I have a mind that works pretty fast and overthinks and overanalyzes pretty much anything, everything. So my whole family was kind of like of that opinion. And my dad had never had a great stomach either. So they were kind of just like, yeah, it's probably part genetic, probably just like, because you're anxious. And so you have an unsettled tummy because you're anxious, like just let it go, like stop worrying about it basically. And I was like, okay, like, I guess that makes sense. Like I should probably just stop focusing on this.
Did before your mom said anything like suck your belly in or why is your belly sticking out? Had you even thought about your belly before that moment?
No.
You hadn't. So she was the one who first brought your attention to it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, her mom had always told her to suck her tummy in. And so she was like, Alexa, I always suck my stomach in whenever I walk. Like you got to have a cinched, snatched waist. And I was like, what? And then I started like, I just had this hyper fixation with women's stomachs, everyone's stomachs actually, and like abs, like having a flat stomach. And that just became my obsession. And, you know, I obviously had like body dysmorphia and like eating disordered eating issues, which weren't just, I don't want to throw my mom under the bus. She was a great mom. Like it wasn't just her. It was like a lot of other stuff going on in my school and like in the media and stuff. Like it was hard growing up in the 90s and early 2000s.
Oh yeah.
But I had this hyper fixation with people's stomachs because I felt like mine was never flat. Like it was never comfortably flat. If I relaxed my ab muscles, it would jump out. Like I would look pregnant. I remember being like many nights being like, Mom, look at my stomach. I look pregnant. Like what's going on with me? And she's like, wow, that's really strange. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And we could never really figure it out. And so I just kind of gave up and I was like, okay, like I need to stop hyperfixating on this stuff because it's not going anywhere and it's just giving me anxiety. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Bali and like just reset. And so I went to Bali, caught all the food poisoning. What I didn't know when I was there is that I also caught mono. One of the girls there in the last week, she got a really bad fever. She was really sick. Like we didn't really know what was going on with her. We're just like, oh, she's sick. She'll just sit in the corner and watch while we train. Like that's it. And obviously, you know, you're at a yoga teacher training. Everyone's like drinking everyone's water. Everyone's like sweating on each other. Like we were all up in each other's business. So in hindsight, it's like not surprising that I caught it from her. I wasn't symptomatic though. Like I didn't have a fever. I didn't have congestion. I just came home and I had crippling fatigue. Like I had just taken 4 weeks off work and I spent it in Bali. You would think I would come back feeling so refreshed and energized. And I just remember being like, I have never felt this level of fatigue before in my life. And I was like, okay, maybe it's just from the food poisoning. Like maybe I'm just kind of like weakened from that. Like my gut just needs to sort of settle down and fix itself. And so I like waited to see a doctor for a few months. Like I got back home at the end of September and I waited until December to see anyone. And it kept just oscillating. Like some days I would feel kind of normal-ish again. I'd be like, okay, great. And I'd like hit it hard in the gym, like, you know, long days at work, same old routine. And then other days I just totally crash where like, unlike before Bali, I would be able to push through whenever I was tired. Like every day I got up and went to the gym, no matter what, like you just push through. Like that's what I always did. And these days I couldn't, like I literally hit a wall. Sometimes I would get to the gym and just be like, I actually can't move right now. Like I just can barely keep my eyes open. I can barely lift my limbs. Like it felt as if something had sucked the life force out of my body. Like I've spent a lot of time trying to describe what it feels like, because most people are just like, oh, you're tired, like take a nap, like you'll be fine or whatever. Or you're tired, like after an all-nighter, right? Like just like drink some coffee and push through it. This wasn't the kind of fatigue you could push through. I've experienced normal fatigue unless like you can amp yourself up and get through it. This wasn't normal fatigue and it didn't go away with sleep or rest. It was just persistent, chronic, crippling fatigued to the point where like your muscles feel weak. Your eyes feel so tired. You like can't keep them open. And so I saw a doctor and she was like, okay, we can give you like antibiotics for food poisoning, assuming it's food poisoning or a parasite. We did a bunch of tests and they came back negative, but like she gave me the drugs anyways. And I kind of just kept feeling pretty awful through January. And then my aunt was like, oh, you should see my naturopath up in Marin. He was a Lyme specialist, but she was like, you know, he does all kinds of things. He might be able to help you. And so I saw him and he did like a very comprehensive blood panel. And when we got the results back, he was like, oh, you have like an off the charts mono infection. And so I was like, oh, he's like, yeah, that's why you're tired. Like whenever you have mono, you get really tired. Like that's one of the major symptoms. And so I was like, oh, okay. Like this is a bit of a relief. This makes sense. Like I'll just take 2 weeks off work. I'll tell my manager I have mono. And the formal name for mono is Epstein-Barr virus. When they test you on blood tests, it's called Epstein-Barr virus. And they'll test you for both antibodies and active virus titer. And both of mine, like my active virus titer was off the charts. So there was an active infection in my body at that time. And I was like, okay, great. Like I'll take 2 weeks off and then I'll go back to work and I'll feel normal again. And that was March of 2020, right when the lockdowns happened, which is really crazy. I don't know what the significance of that timing is yet, but it feels significant. And as soon as I rested and the adrenaline dropped, I could not get up again. Like I just couldn't, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't move. I couldn't keep my eyes open throughout the day. I would wake up every morning. I would move to the couch. I would like walk like 20 feet, lie down on the couch. And I would spend the rest of the day lying down on the couch, but I couldn't sleep either. Like I was so tired, but I couldn't sleep. And I was too tired to read. And I was too tired to really pay attention to TV because my eyes wanted to be closed. So literally I would just spend all day lying down with my eyes closed, just waiting for the day to end. And then I would go to sleep and wake up and do it all over again. And then a few months into that, and I had to extend my leave because I was like, I can't function. Like, I don't know what's going on. I can't walk down the street. I can't drive and get my groceries. I can't, like, I have no life force in me to do anything. It made no sense. Everyone in my family is like freaking out. We're like, what is going on right now? Like, this is really weird. I've never seen anyone with mono like this before. And so we're trying to get more signal, talk to different doctors, talk to infectious disease specialists, like went back to the naturopath to do more testing. And then in June, all the fires in Northern California started. So it's smoky as all heck. And then I start getting horrible migraines. I've never had a headache before in my life. I've had like maybe 5 headaches in all 29 years of life. I never used to get headaches at all. Like I didn't even have Advil in my house because headaches just weren't something I ever experienced. And now it was back to back every single freaking day, excruciating migraines. And we were like, what the heck is happening? This makes no sense. Like I've never had headaches before in my life. And now I like can't even now I wasn't even going to the couch. I was literally just staying in bed with the lights off and like alternating ice and heat on my head, trying to get some relief. None of the migraine medications that were being prescribed to me helped. I like went to urgent care, got like the shot they give you for pain relief, and none of that did anything. And so I was just like really terrified at this point because I have no energy, I can't move, and now I'm in excruciating pain, right? So at this point I'm like, wow, I feel like I've hit rock bottom. I felt like it really sucked when I didn't have energy. But now not only do I have no energy, but I'm in the worst pain of my life. And it was that moment when I realized it can always get worse. So be grateful for wherever you are in life because everything can always get worse. And so I was like, dear God, like, please don't get any worse than this. Like, please help me find relief. I was going to like migraine specialists at UCSF. I was trying to talk to infectious disease specialists at Stanford. Like no one could figure out what the heck was going on with me. And then this naturopath comes back with these blood test results. And he's like, yo, like we did this kind of alternative testing that's supposed to be much more sensitive than standard LabCorp lab testing. And it showed traces of Lyme disease. And that's why you're feeling so awful. And that's why you're having kind of like nerve, headache, migraine issues. He was like, you have Lyme disease. And I was like, oh, wow, that really sucks. But like, I guess that makes sense. Like maybe I didn't just have mono. Maybe I had mono and Lyme. Like maybe a tick bit me when I was in Bali. And now I'm just, you know, feeling real weird. And what's crazy is that one of the other girls who I became very close friends with on the trip legitimately got diagnosed with Lyme disease at the same time as me. But her blood test with the standard lab testing that is, you know, regulated by the CDC and actually approved, her standard testing came back positive. So we knew for sure that she had Lyme. And we were like, oh, okay, like my standard testing came back negative, but this sensitive, supposedly better testing came back positive. If she had it and we were in the same place and we've both been feeling really sick, like makes sense that I would have it too. So we assumed this doctor was right. We assumed these tests were right. And he starts putting me on this protocol that's supposed to make me feel better, supposed to kill the Lyme. But he says, in the process of killing the Lyme disease, you explode the bugs. The bugs explode inside you. The Lyme bacteria or whatever explodes inside you. And it releases toxins. So in the process of helping you heal, you're going to feel a lot worse. And I was like, okay, that sounds not fun. But if you say that that's like what should be going on in my body, okay, like I guess I believe you. And so I was on these drugs for another few months. This point is October. I take them until December. A couple days before Christmas, I am in the worst state I've ever been. I am in the most excruciating pain and I can't move at all. I can't drive. I can't, like, it's awful. It's awful. I'm nauseous. I'm experiencing every awful symptom you could possibly experience. And I stop the drive. I schedule an emergency meet appointment with him. My mom has to drive me all the way there because I cannot drive myself. And she was just like, something needs to change. Like something is wrong. My daughter looks like she's dying. And he was like, yeah, okay. Like, let's just back off from these drugs for a little bit. You can take a little break and then maybe we'll try a different protocol when you feel a little better. And so we like took, I think, 4 or 6 weeks off the protocol. I started to feel like a little bit marginally better. And then he puts me on like a different drug. He puts me on different antibiotics that like, I'm just having all the symptoms now and I can't tell what is the underlying issue and what is a side effect of the drugs he's giving me at this point.
Did he put you on the PIC line? Because I remember at one point you were, no, okay.
He didn't put me on a PIC line, but he did have me go into his office twice a week for infusions. He would do a vitamin, like very high dose vitamin C, which was supposed to help with the mono. And then he would also put me on other stuff that was supposed to help the Lyme. And all of it made me feel so sick. It all made me feel so much worse. And you have to sit there for like 2 hours or 3 hours while it's pumping into you intravenously. And it's like hundreds of dollars that insurance doesn't cover. So it was really just lose, lose, lose across the board. And I remember he also put me on like an oral antibiotic after that. And I remember breaking out like full face of acne, like just hard red bumps everywhere. And I was like, this just feels so wrong. And I remember getting like insanely depressed, like suicidal. I was like, my brain does not feel like my own right now. Like this just feels really off. And finally, my mom, at this point, I was basically living at my mom's house because being around her just felt safer. And we would like self-diagnose and like self-experiment and take notes together. Like she was the only one kind of really helping me figure it out because she had gone through like her own health journey when she was younger. And my boyfriend at the time who was living with me was not helping at all. So like he was just kind of living in the house that I bought for us with the dog that he wanted. And he was just kind of living there alone while I would just stay at my mom's house and try to figure things out. And it was just crazy. Finally, my mom and I are like, listen, like this isn't working. Let's cut ties with this crazy naturopath and stop all the drugs and just see what your body will do on its own. And finally, I started to slowly trend positive on my own. And I posted about this on Instagram. I was so frustrated. I basically just like summarized everything that had happened in like, you know, five stories or something. My friend's little brother reaches out to me and is like, hey, my girlfriend is a doctor who specializes in complex cases. Can I connect you with her and see if she can help you? And I was like, fine, bro, whatever. And this woman calls me right away, spends an hour talking on the phone with me, has me send over 40 pages of like all the different blood tests that all these different doctors have done. And she gets back to me and she's like, yeah, you don't have Lyme disease. Like, this is bullshit. These tests are bullshit. All these like specialty labs are full of shit. Like, they're not regulated. They're not approved. Like, none of it is proven. You do not have Lyme disease. And I was like, thank the Lord. Like, it never felt like it resonated with me, but I just wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to have a diagnosis so I could know how to like treat myself. She was like, that's not what's wrong with you. What sounds like what's wrong with you is myalgic encephalomyelitis. It's a really long word, but they call it ME/CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. And I was like, yes, fatigue. That has always been my primary symptom with a side effect of pain, a little pain on the side. And she was like, yeah, great news. Like, the best clinic in the country for CFS is at Stanford, an hour away from you. And I was like, oh my God, wow, this is crazy. She's like, let me refer you to that clinic. I'll get you in. So she gets me into this clinic. She doesn't charge me anything for any of this, by the way. She just like does this out of the goodness of her heart. She's a total badass. She's also like a professional body lifter. She's magical doctor woman and also just like shredded.
Wait, do we get awesome. To say her name? What is her name?
I want to say it's Val. It's Val something. I have to go back. It's like, it's so funny how deep this is in my memory. Cause I just like, I feel like I've moved so far past it, but her name is Val.
This is so important because honestly, I think a lot of people are being misdiagnosed and treated.
Dude, 100%. And I feel like the Lyme especially, I feel like so many people get misdiagnosed with Lyme and they get sent to these crazy naturopaths who treat them with all these crazy expensive, unproven things. And they just feel sicker. And I'm like, this is a cult. It felt like a cult. And someone's going to like produce a documentary that blows this shit wide open. But my experience was awful. And I probably could have sued the doctor if I wanted to. I didn't want any more ties to them or to Lyme or to anything. I just wanted to get better. Val Uline, U-L-E-L-N-E. Val Uline, Uline. Yeah.
Well, we'll tag her in the notes because good for her. And what an angel.
Yeah. So anyways, then I went to Stanford and I feel like I started seeing you somewhere before this.
We spoke for the first time in January 11th, 2021. And you were on medical leave for 10 months.
Yeah. And then, I ended up being on medical leave for almost 2 years.
Yeah. And then we worked on your gut. We did a gut reset with diet only, because that's what I work with, on January 25th, 2021. And the concerns at the time were Lyme, your longstanding gut issues, mental clarity, energy, and acne.
Yeah. All the things, basically. I remember my friend Haley sent me the podcast you did with Lacey, and she was like, you need to talk to Unique. And I was like, Unique is all about beans. I've literally never been able to eat beans in my entire life, ever. Beans would destroy me. I'm the person who, when eating fiber, would make me more constipated and more miserable, not better. So I was like, there's no way this woman can help me. And finally, I don't know what it was, just like a ping from the universe or whatever, but I did talk to you and you did put me on the protocol, and it took so long for me, eating like a spoonful of beans at a time. But finally we like turned the ship around. I was shocked. I didn't think it was possible, but we got to a point where between you and Stanford, they put me on kind of a couple of drugs. They put me on low dose naltrexone. And so we tried that. And I feel like that plus diet was just like really trying to get my headspace in a better place and like, you know, really working through like pain management, meditations and stuff. I got to a world where I could eat fiber, and I did eat fiber. I would eat beans with every meal. and for snacks, and I was pooping normally, like a normal human, without Miralax, without laxatives, only with a little bit of magnesium citrate at night. And that was just like the biggest win for me. I was like, oh my God, I'm like not always bloated. I don't have toxic gas and I poop like a normal human. This is delightful. And so all of that happened in like, I don't know, I want to say like it took a while. Like it took me a while to ramp up to all the fiber and stuff. And I remember I like couldn't even tolerate sourdough either. Like sourdough would make me more constipated too. Now I eat sourdough every day. I eat beans every day. I eat sourdough every day. Life's great. We're good.
It was a complex, like your journey is so complex. And again, I'm really appreciative that you're willing to share it, because I do think that you're not alone in being thrown down paths that you don't belong on, you know, misdiagnosed. And it's important to have this information out there, especially with experimental testing, you know. And I remember when you went to Stanford, and I think you saw Dr. Hector, and you were just like, unique. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have Lyme.
Yeah.
I've been treated all this time for Lyme and I don't have Lyme. And I just remember celebrating you, because it took such a long time for you to get there. Cause I remember the rounds and rounds of antibiotics, and I was just like, oh,
awful. It was awful. And I used to, you know, what's crazy is I used to take antibiotics like at least once a year for a sinus infection. I know that's crazy. And I didn't realize how bad they were for your gut. Like no one would tell me. My doctor, I would literally just go to my GP and be like, hey, like I'm having really bad sinus pain. I think I have a sinus infection. He'd be like, okay, great. Amoxicillin. Here you go. Like, thanks.
And you have stomach issues. So it's not like,
yeah. So it was just crazy. And so yeah, I finished up that year. I'm able to go back to work at the end of that year. So at the end of 2021, I finally go back to work almost 2 years later, which is crazy. It's amazing that my employer supported me throughout that whole time and like let me come back. Like that was really, really lucky. And then like right after I go back to working, I'm like, why am I with this partner who literally did nothing to help me when I was at my worst? And we had talked about getting married, and I remember him being like, I don't know that I want to sign up for a life with someone who's sick. And not verbatim, but it was that concept. Like, I can't commit to someone who might be sick forever. And at the time I was like, yeah, I guess that's reasonable. And then I told my mom that like months later, and she was like, what the fuck, Alexa? Like, I love you no matter what. I love you when you're a overcooked vegetable, and I love you when you're like a spring chicken. Like, love is unconditional. Like, how he treated you, what he said is complete bullshit, and you never should have been together in the first place. And I'd actually had like doubts on and off about this person for the 5 years that we were dating. And so it was all just a big lesson to listen to your gut. Like, right? I didn't do it after like the first 6 months, and I didn't, probably because I was like afraid that I would never find anyone and like didn't want to be alone. And so it was a painful lesson, but ended it with this person. And I posted on Instagram again the day he officially moved out. He needed a lot of support. Like, he was texting me every day, like needed help finding an apartment. I gave him a bunch of furniture. Like, it was a lot.
For the record, when I got sick with Crohn's and I told my partner to leave, I was like, you didn't sign up for this. We were pretty new, and I'm like, I was healthy and now I'm really sick and this isn't going anywhere good. He was like, fuck off. I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. So that feeling of like, yeah, I don't want to be alone, but love is unconditional, like real love. It's not, oh, because you're not healthy, I'm going to leave. I remember I wanted him to, because I was like, damn, I'm shitting my pants. This is not sexy.
Yes. I
may poop on you in the night. I have no idea.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. Wait, that's like the perfect segue, because I posted the day he moved out something stupid like, oh, change is hard but good. And then like a day or two later, my current husband texted me after 8 years of us not having spoken. We went to high school together. We played on our high school tennis team together. We were friends through college. We coached together. And then just after college, we had a moment, and then we just never talked. And that was it. And so this is the first time he had texted me in like 8 years, and he made up something really silly, but I believed him at the time. He was like, "Oh yeah, hey, happy new year, Alexa." It was January this time, January 2022. It's like, "Oh, I randomly had a dream about you. Hope you're doing really well. I moved back up to the Bay Area. If you ever want to hang out, let me know." Because he'd been down in LA for a long time. And I was like, "Oh, wait, this is random. Why not?" Like, I texted back just kind of telling him like, "Oh, hey, like my health is not in a great place. Like I can't really do much. Like I can't play tennis or whatever." And he's like, "That's fine. I'll come to you. I'll just come over and say hi." And he came over, he brought chocolate, which is always like, I'll always
take. Like, sorry, unique. I'm just kidding.
I know. It's not the bean protocol approved, but I'm like, this is sweet. He doesn't know what diet I'm on. And we just like talked forever. And that's when we started dating. And then he proposed to me like 10 months later. And it was just like you said, like his love was completely unconditional. Like I was still struggling a lot. Like I was still really tired, even though I was able to work a little bit and able to like function more normally. Like I was not a normal person still. Like I really had trouble exercising. Like for me, a 20-minute walk was like a good day. And just getting through the day was pretty hard without having to like lie down and take quite a few breaks. So there were many, 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 pretty much all the days we had together. I was part vegetable, and he's the complete opposite of me. He's a tennis pro by design because he's overflowing with energy. Like he is at the like 99th percentile of energy a human could possibly have. And he would just like lie on the couch with me and watch Disney movies. And he loved me just for me, not for what I could do or how fun I was to hang out with. Like he still had fun with me just being a vegetable. And when I had painful headaches, like my headaches would kind of like come in waves. Like some months they would be really bad, and then some months they would kind of go away. And when they were really bad, he would like scour the internet, find like random gizmos or things to like stretch my neck, massage my muscles, like relieve tension headaches. He would just really do kind of anything to be supportive. And that was kind of my first taste of unconditional love outside of the family context. Like my
Much deserved. Isn't that nice, the difference?
Yeah, it was very nice. It was very nice. It was beautiful and wonderful, and it was just really special. And so at the end of that year, I was still like, why am I still tired? Like, I've been on this drug for a while. Like, why is it not getting better? I would ask the Stanford Clinic, and they're like, well, like, sometimes people don't get back to 100%, and that's just that, you know, and this is like a lifetime drug. So this is like a maintenance thing. You'll be on it forever. And then my little brother went on a trip to Tahoe with his friends for New Year's. And he calls me after New Year's, like New Year's Day or the second or something. He's like, "Hey, Alexa, like my buddy's wife went through exactly the same thing as you. You need to talk to her." And so I talked to her, and she's like, "Yeah, it was my breast implants." And I was like, what the actual fuck? Like I had heard of breast implant illness and throughout my journey, and I'd like looked into it a little bit, and I was like, no, there's no way my boobs are making me this sick. Like I have saline implants, like they're not silicone. And this whole breast implant illness thing sounds like a cult and a conspiracy theory, just like Lyme. And so I was like, no, but part of me was like that because I really wanted to have big boobs and I felt sexier with boobs and I really didn't want to give them up. And I'd even scheduled an appointment with my original surgeon who put them in. He's like, there's no credibility to these theories or claims of breast implant illness. Like, that's not your problem. You must be going through something else. And I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. Because that was the answer I wanted to hear. And after talking to this girl, I was just like, you know what? We have turned over every fucking stone, and I'm still, sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but I
just— Oh, you are. You are.
Keep it out. I was like, we have turned over every stone at this point. Like, I have to try this. Like I just knew in my gut that like something was still wrong inside of me. And this was the only path left to take. And so I was like, okay, worst case, my boobs are small. But that's fine. Like, best case, it's probably going to be better for my back in the long run. I have really severe scoliosis, like borderline surgery case. So like, worst case, it'll be better for my posture in the long run. And like, I'll just be a petite flat chested girly again.
You know, there's a name for it. It's the itty bitty titty committee.
Committee, yeah.
And it's, and honestly, I think it's sexy. So good.
I feel like it's kind of in now. When yeah. I was growing up, it was not. It was Victoria's Secret model, like 100 pounds, double D's. That was the look.
What is that? What is the name? That it's tits on a stick?
I've not heard that one, but that resonates for sure. Yeah, growing up, I just never had boobs, like not even an A cup.
Well, you were an athlete, right? It was probably
Exactly. Yeah. I have an athlete's body. I'm very petite too. So I'm like natural petite plus very lean. Like, you're just not going to have a lot of boobs. And no women in my family have giant boobs, except for my yaya, who was very overweight, and that doesn't count. But yeah, paint me white. I'll blend in with the wall, man. Like, we got no topography going on.
I remember when you reached out and you're like, I'm thinking about doing this. And I'm like, does it feel like the right move? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, do it. You know, it's like you had the good diet. I mean, what was really wonderful about working with you is you knew that having a strong diet was kind of the
foundation,
right? Yeah.
I feel like it helped me get to as good as I was able to get, because, you know, even a year prior, I couldn't walk down the street. Like, I couldn't walk 100 yards. Like, I could not walk a football field. I couldn't even walk half a football field. And so I got to the point where I was able to work. I was able to, like, you know, do errands, live my life in the most basic form. And for a long time, I was like, okay, this is just what my life is going to look like. I don't exactly know how I'm going to handle kids with this, but I'm going to make it work in some way. And Nick and I were kind of like, you know what, will make this work. But he never lost faith. He and my mom were always like, Alexa, this is not your peak. You're going up. We're going to figure this out. You're going to get better at some point. I know it. We're going to play tennis again. And so I was like, okay, like, if you say so, I guess, like, maybe I just have to wait longer. But then we found this and I was like, this just feels right. And poor Nick, he was like, wait a minute. One day we're like, going on as usual, and now you want to have this major surgery and like significantly change the way your body looks. What? I'm gonna have to like take care of you for 3 weeks while you're recovering from surgery. And I was like, yeah, this is what's happening. And he was kind of in a shock for a day or two, and then he was like, okay, like, let's do this. Let's get you healthy. Let's see whatever works. And we were able to get in early, like with a surgeon locally in Marin. Because one of his patients had canceled. The wait lists were like 6 to 12 months long otherwise. So I was able to get in with this person on Valentine's Day. And so on Valentine's Day, I go in, get the implants removed, and I come back home to recover. And they do testing on the implants to see if there are bacterial cultures. And so there are two leading theories as to what causes breast implant illness. One is that certain people just have more active immune systems. And so they identify this as a foreign object. And so it just triggers the immune system. They're like, oh my gosh, what is this foreign thing in my body right now? Need to attack it. Trigger immune system, trigger inflammation, trigger fatigue, trigger symptoms, whatever. That was a theory that resonated most with me. And I believe that's what was going on in my body, especially like with all the pain, like that really didn't make sense in any way. And people get localized pain or symptoms because as the implants age in your body, it breaks down, right? And so the silicone then travels throughout your body. And so that's why some people can have symptoms like in their legs, in their arms, in their head, whatever. And so that one resonated most with me. The other leading theory is that like bacterial cultures build up on these things, and they just become like cesspools. And then your immune system triggers responses because it's trying to fight the bacterial infection. So either one could be true. I don't know. We'll never know. There's not like an objective test that can prove or disprove it. But I just know that after getting those suckers removed, I would say it took maybe like 4 to 6 weeks for me to start feeling noticeably different. And you're still recovering from major surgery, so like keep that in mind. But after then, it was just different, like a whole different level. I feel like I'd unlocked.
Did you play tennis?
I played pickleball. I did play tennis. I played a little bit of tennis. My husband just got home and he's playing really sick. But I just felt like a normal person again. Like I was starting to do normal things and the pain was getting better. And I just like started recovering. And we had our wedding 3 months after that. And, you know, I was still tired. Like I wasn't partying like probably a normal 32-year-old would have partied, but I made it through the whole day and we had a beautiful wedding and it was great. And I would say it took like 12 months after surgery for me to feel normal again. And I was pregnant when I hit that 12-month mark, but starting at the beginning of this year, I finally feel like normal, albeit pregnant person, but I feel like I have normal energy levels. Again, caveat being that I'm pregnant. Sometimes pregnant people can be more tired, but I'm lifting weights. I'm, you know, not running consistently yet, but I'll walk on steep incline on my treadmill and just, I don't know, I just feel like a more normal person. I'm handling like a very heavy workload at work, just like I would have normally, handling it just fine, staying up later, just, again, normal is the key word here. I feel normal, which is a place I never thought I would ever get to. And it's just been like kind of an insane journey, but I feel like everything sort of happened to plan.
Yeah, I was just looking at our notes and I was trying to see, I think your periods were always pretty, were your periods? You weren't having cramps in 2022 on protocol. But you had cramps before then, is what I think I remember. Do you remember that?
Yeah. So I didn't ever have them ever. I've had like an irregular period forever. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I thought, I was like, oh, it's going to be really hard for me to get pregnant. It wasn't. We got pregnant the first time we tried, which is amazing. Again, to the BEAM protocol, I think. But I think after I got the vaccine, I started getting cramps or just sometime in either 2020 or 2021 when... Very vague. I can't totally remember because there was so much going on. But I know that sometime in that space, I started getting cramps with my period, which I've never had before. Mm-hmm. So like, this is kind of funky. Like maybe it's just because my health stuff has been so weird. But yeah, apart from the cramps, they're like very regular. They started being very regular.
And then the last time we spoke, actually, it's funny where we left off because we spoke in April 9th, because of the nausea. We were trying to come up with plans to help with your nausea. Yeah.
Pregnancy nausea, not abnormal nausea.
No, yeah, that nausea went away, but the pregnancy nausea, which I really related to because I had the worst nausea 8 months of my pregnancy.
You had it way worse than
it was
me.
The worst.
Yeah, I think mine in large part was acid reflux and they put me on Prilosec and that helped a lot. And I don't want to be on.
Are you on it still?
I am.
You are. Are you still having, acid reflux?
Yeah. Oh. It's awful. Cause like the baby shoves all your organs into this like tiny space up near your boobs. And so just everything wants to come back up. But yeah, I used to be on Prilosec like for years when I was in college. Cause I was just having all these like gut issues stuff. And I remember I just like went out to my supplement cabinet and I cleaned it out after we started working together. I was like, I don't need any of this garbage anymore. And it was so good to have like a probiotic.
It's freeing. Yeah. I think we worked with the magnesium for you at one point, really got you going on the probiotic, and then the fermented foods really helped.
Yeah. Really loved the kraut, was going hard on the kraut. Yeah. Can't do it in pregnancy. The kraut is not sitting well.
Well, do you have foods that you still can't tolerate and foods that you can? Like, are you feeling over that initial hump?
No, I still have like pretty strong cravings and aversions. Although some of the cravings are good. Like I crave red meat and I feel like that's good because I did not used to eat enough of it.
Yeah.
So I yesterday had like an amazing.
Yeah. Mama needs a good amount of iron for baby.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of them become anemic because of all the extra blood you're producing.
Oh yeah. And your baby gets iron from you. So you having plenty of iron is really key. And the last time we talked, I don't know if I know the answer to this, but you had a baby shower on the 12th and you were going to reveal if it's a boy or a girl.
We're having a boy.
And you said, I think it's a boy.
Yeah. I mean, a 50% chance of getting it right. But
you know, and I said girl because you were so nauseous. And I was like, yeah, girl. And then, yeah, and I think your mom said it was a girl. And you were like, boy. But I think it's a boy. And you were right. I mean,
yeah, crushed it.
Crushed it. You're gonna be a good boy mom.
I think I'll be I feel like I was meant to be a boy mom. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited.
I think so too. And you know, it's really interesting on a total side note, but it's the year of the dragon. And
I know. I'm so excited. It feels so perfect, like aligned.
When is your due date?
October 17th.
I remember I'm a dragon. I'm born in the year of the dragon. And I remember going, if I wanted to have a dragon, I would have to be 48 years old when I'm pregnant.
Oh my God. No.
Or 38. Oh my God. No. No, it wouldn't be 38 because that's, wait, right?
I have no idea. I'm not the person to ask.
It's every 12 years. It's every 12 okay. years, you, okay, the signs cycle. Okay. So the year of the dragon. So you're going to I cannot tell you, it is really nuts. Most of the people I'm working with right now who are pregnant are all having boys in the year of the dragon. Like, that's, it is a crazy, big dragon year. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Wild. It'd
be a Libra. I just fact checked that.
Libra.
Libra is cool. Late September to late October.
Awesome.
So yeah. I might.
That's so exciting. And in pregnancy, besides feeling a little tired and having some food aversions, you're feeling pretty good.
I mean, pregnancy is a journey for everyone. I think, like, you know, there are definitely some emotional ups and downs for no reason, and had a little bit of trouble sleeping at first. Now I sleep like a rock.
Yay.
And yeah, you don't poop normally when you're pregnant. I'm still working on that. Some days are okay. And then some days I'm just like, all right, so this is going to be like, I'm going to poop four times a little bit today. And that's just what it's going to be. And that's okay. I'm just looking forward to postpartum and I can go back to my like normal, great poop life.
Yeah. You know, pregnancy was a labor of love. Ha ha. For me, I did it twice only because I was like, oh, I don't want a single, I don't want, you know, a solo, but pregnancy, like my mom loved pregnancy, was like, you know, I had as many kids as my dad would put up with, and
God bless her soul.
Yeah. And I was like, that wasn't how it, I mean, I had really fast labor. It was from the time the first cramp started to delivering the baby was 5 hours.
No way.
Yeah. Both top to bottom, each one, my water broke at like,
I want that,
3 a.m. And then at 8 o'clock in the morning, I had a baby in my arms. And
that's crazy. You're so lucky.
My doctor, after the first one happened, he's like, oh, that's a fluke. The second one will probably be longer. And then I had the identical, and they're both born in the 8 o'clock hour, 2.5 years apart.
That's crazy. Wait, that's actually nuts. All my friends were like, yeah, I was laboring for like 3.5 days. It was awful. I was like, oh my God, this sounds miserable.
You know what it is? Because you don't know what's happening the first time around. I think the second one, a lot of people actually will have a quicker labor and they say, oh, it's because you had a baby. But I think it's because it's like, you know how when you drive down a road the first time, it seems really long.
Yeah.
And then you drive down that road again and it's like, wow, this is not nearly as long as I remember it.
For sure.
There's like a sense of like a journey, like you've been somewhere before. There's an understanding and everything is familiar. But I think a lot of the first time labor is scary because you've never been down that road before.
Yeah.
So you're probably a lot more tense than you know, like, you know, bracing yourself and totally. Yeah.
I will also say one thing, just circling back to the beam protocol. I had horrible acne before. Starting in like with my weird illness, I broke out in like cystic acne on my back. And that's I've always just had horrible face acne. And I tried everything apart from Accutane to get rid of it as a kid through like teenage years, college, after college. I was like, what the heck? Why am I 28 and still my face is so red and pimply? I would have like bumps all over my forehead, all over my chin. It wasn't necessarily cystic on my face. It was just so red, so, so red and angry all the time. And I was like, nothing, just like nothing's going to fix this. This is so annoying. Maybe when I'm 40, it'll be gone. And beam protocol, like my face, I'm not wearing any makeup right now. And, you know, I have like pregnancy hormones going on. So I have like a little bit on my chin, but before I got pregnant, it was like completely clear. And I was like, I've never thought my face would look like this before. and it just shocked. Yeah.
No, you look so good. You're 6 months pregnant now.
Yeah.
You look literally, you're wearing a black shirt, but it's like, you just look like anybody, you know, like super fit up top. And I was like, wait, you are pregnant, right? But also the thing that I really remember and think about now is because I run a practice that's on the phone, I listen to people. And I remember from the first time I spoke to you and to now, what a different sounding person you are.
Yeah, my voice was very thin and weak before because I was
thin
so
and weak and tired, but also just tired, and not just tired on a physical level, just tired on a soul level. It was like I was meeting a person who had turned over every single rock from the age of 13 for so many different things that there was just a listening to you. It was just like, what else is there unique? You know, yeah. And I was like, well,
it's so worn down.
It's a long road, but let's just focus on the foundation. And let's make sure you get enough protein and make sure you get enough nutrients. Yeah. And, you know, I have such an incredible belief in the human body. I couldn't do what I do if I didn't, you know, because I see so many different things and it's just like, get the foundation, support that foundation. And obviously for you, there were other pieces that needed to come into play. Stanford, like getting them on your team and troubleshooting, and then, you know, getting the boobs removed and that putting you in another field of health. And it was like almost every decision you made, not out of fear, but out of this feels right, was like the next step forward for you. And that gut feeling that, yeah, this feels right, I think is such an important one to remind everybody to listen to. If something doesn't feel right, like I remember you going, yeah, the doctor wants me to take another round of antibiotics. It just doesn't feel right. And I was like, I think you should listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually went off the low dose naltrexone a few months after my explant surgery because I was like, I don't like, this feels off. And mm-hmm. I actually had more energy after I went off it. So ironically, LDN can have a side effect of making you tired. It also gives you crazy ass nightmares, like the most vivid nightmares ever. Yeah. I remember talking to you about it and being like, what the fuck? These dreams are disturbing.
Yeah. I was on it for a couple of months in my exploratory Crohn's days, trying not to get on medications, hardcore medications, and the dreams. I was on it for like a couple of weeks and I was like, fuck these dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was on it for a few years and finally I was just like, nope. And I got off it and then I got off all the meds and then we got pregnant and then.
Eureka.
Ooh, here we are. That's great.
So amazing. Your story is so amazing. I know it's going to inspire so many people who feel lost in their health journey and just to not give up. I mean, you're living not just a beautiful life, you're going to have a stunning child and you have an incredible partner who's loving and unconditionally loves you. And it's been an honor to witness your journey from all of these different, I feel like I've been on this incredible journey with you, just kind of watching you expand and grow into spaces and feel better and do things. And, you know, you were couch ridden and it's just amazing. You've come a long way.
Yeah. I mean, I really want to thank you for supporting me in my whole journey. Like you don't just provide nutritional support. You were definitely providing emotional support. Like I would message you all the time being like, Unique, it's a bad day. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why isn't it getting better? And you just like calm me down. And there were so many points where I just like gave up. I was like, I'm never going to get better. This is going to be my life forever. Like, I might as well just die. And I'm really glad that obviously I like didn't take any extreme action. And like, I was so lucky to have my mom and Nick around to like scrape my sorry butt off the floor and like give me a pep talk and be like, snap out of it, Alexa. Like, we're gonna get through this. Just like get through another day. Just get through today. And tomorrow is either gonna be better or worse. And then you'll know what to do. If it's better, great, keep doing what you're doing. If it's worse, okay, great. Let's go back and see what we changed and like reverse that. Mm-hmm. So it just became like a very methodical approach of like self-experimenting, self-diagnosing, like just self-checking and checking in with myself, with my intuition and my gut and being like, okay, do I feel like directionally I'm going towards the right place? And obviously it's never perfectly linear and I expected it to be, and that was just like not realistic. It's going to be a roller coaster, but you look at that trend curve And so you look at like the average plot of the points over time and you're like, okay, am I over the past 3 months improving? Am I over the past year improving? And the answer is yes. And so you know you're going in the right direction.
Even if it's in little, and again, powerful point and something I really try to talk to all of my clients who are really digging themselves out of a hole. It's like, let's just say your hole started when you were 13. You know, that coming out of digging out of that hole isn't going to be this fast, potentially. I mean, look, I always leave room for miraculous healing, but mostly it's going to be this journey of things being a little bit better than they were. And sometimes there's going to be valleys and you're going to feel like you're going backwards. I felt like I was going backwards all the time, but the ending of that net journey is you're better, you know, and things keep getting better. And you're a warrior, you know, is the bottom line. The fact that you are a badass in business and you have that athletic, you know, keep going mentality, I think really did help you in this journey, even when you were down and out. You might have been down and out right in that moment, but there was no way you were going to stay there.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much. It was such a great lesson in mental resilience.
Yeah.
Like that was really something like I've obviously overcome like mental resilience in school. Like I was really good at school, I was good at sports, but this was just like a whole other level, like a whole different experience. And it was also a great lesson in patience. I've been impatient my whole life. I want like the outcome and the end and the reward to come immediately. And so having to wait for it, having to go through this for like almost 5 years, really, it's just crazy. Like half a decade is a really long time. Like when you think of, I don't want to think of it as years lost, but it's just like years not spent the way you thought they were going to go. Like what I thought was going to be a 2 week mono break from work turned into several years. And like sometimes you just have to like play the long game. You just like dig in and like grit through it. But that's okay. Like there's always another side.
Yeah,
And
and there's, you know, we're living longer, healthier than we ever have. So I do remember feeling that way too, though, because I was diagnosed at 34, but I was having gut issues from 30. And I think of my 30s as kind of these lost years. And I feel like for women, these should kind of be your best years, you know, like
totally.
30 should be the best. You know, because you've got a little bit more wisdom, you feel more comfortable in your
Totally.
body. It's like I had an expiration date while everybody else was thriving, you know, so I feel you.
You feel like you're missing out, especially around that time. For my friends, all my friends were getting married and all my friends were having kids. Meanwhile, I'm like potato on the couch, just, trying to get through the day. I just felt like I was losing out on my time, especially because I hadn't had kids at that point. I was like, oh my gosh, like I really want to have babies. I don't want to be in my 40s when I do. So like we gotta figure shit out.
Well, you're fertile Myrtle, as they say.
It all
Yeah,
worked out.
it
And
all
again,
worked out.
I feel like that changed because for my mom, it took her almost a decade to get pregnant with me. And I had irregular periods for like most of my life until the past few years. So
Being protocol, eating well for the win, getting healthy for the win. You know, it's interesting because your transition out of your last relationship and then meeting Nick and now having this beautiful love relationship. It's the one thing I have seen where when my clients get healthier, they start looking around being like, what doesn't make sense here anymore?
yeah,
Yeah.
totally.
Cause when you're sick, you just don't want to be alone, right? It's just like, I just don't want to be alone when you're sick,
You
even
don't
though you were kind
yeah.
of not there, but.
You don't want to be alone, but also like you don't have any energy or mind space or capacity to think about anything else. You're like, the most important problem for me to solve is to not be sick anymore. I can't think about any other problems. I can't think about anything else, period.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of put all the other problems on the back burner. And I finally like took a step back and was like, wait a minute, this smells funky. This doesn't feel
Something doesn't smell like unconditional love around here.
right.
Well, thank you. You've shared a lot of adrenaline with me today. As another high adrenaline maker, I appreciate that because I know how it can rev the nervous system. So thank you. Thank you for your vulnerability, for sharing your story, and for being you. And just know that anywhere I can help you, I'm always going to be here for you.
Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you and everything that you do. And aww. I hope this helps someone else.
I know it will. I mean, I have so many people who message
me. I'm so glad this worked out.
Yeah, really wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And, thank you for the time.
Thank you so much for joining me and Alexa today. I really appreciate it. I wanted to remind you that my next group runs in September. We'll take you all the way through to the holidays. You'll get the support, the tools, and the community you need to take care of your health. A lot of healing journeys are, and like most things in life, there is no certainty, right? But if we don't show up daily and have commitment, we'll never know. And I think Alexa's story is profound in her dedication to keep showing up, keep showing up, keep showing up. And sometimes that is exactly what it takes to see the change that we want in our health. And it's okay to be dedicated. It's also okay to not be perfect. But dedication means you're showing up good days, bad days, all days. You're just showing up. Keep showing up and you'll get there. I know you will because I've just seen it so many times. Like, how can you not? Your body needs the nutrients to create its best health. And what better way to send love letters to your body than to nourish it? All right. I hope you're taking care of yourself wherever you are in this beautiful world, morning, evening, or night. Thank you.